You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the fabulous Feinstein's 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder. Please take this moment to silence your cell phones. Also, there is no flash photography, please.
Welcome to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast, where we take you behind the scenes at Broadway Supper Club. I'm Kevin Ferguson, the club's assistant programming director, and our guest today is a triple threat, actor, singer, dancer, who always brings his signature style to Feinstein's 54 Below, offering a little song, a little dance, and a whole lot of love. This Tony Award nominee, Tony Yazbek, has starred in 10 Broadway shows, including On the Town, Gypsy, Pensive Broadway, so many things. Next up, Tony is planning on playing Cary Grant in the new Broadway musical Flying Over Sunset, opening this fall at the Vivian Beaumont Theater. Everybody, help me welcome the one, the only, Tony Yazbek. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for welcoming me. Appreciate it.
This is so exciting. I have seen your show at 54 Below a couple times because I used to work with the front door team and the box office. So I used to watch your show through the screen. You're just so talented. I'm so excited to get to chat with you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Kevin. You got to see me in many evolutions. I've come to 54 many times through the years. I'll never forget the first time I was there. And you probably saw me all nervous, pacing by the front door or something before my first entrance. Never had done it before.
No, you've never looked nervous to me. You've always been a star. And yeah, growing up a theater kid, tap dance was like my favorite thing. So seeing you do your thing is always so exciting. But we'll talk all about the tap dancing.
Thank you. I love putting song and dance on the stage. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. It's a small stage, but you get to jam pack it with a lot of energy.
Yeah, you do it so gracefully. It's so crazy. I tried to tap dance on the 54 Below stage one time and almost flew off the stage. So you nail it. It's such a tight space. But we're going to talk all about your show and all about your tap dancing. But first, let's just talk about this feeling of coming out of 2020 and getting back on a stage. Is the 54 Below stage for your show going to be your first time getting back on a stage since the pandemic? Or have you been able to get back on one? And how's that been since the shutdown?
Well, I've been on a few stages. The first time I've had a stage with an audience was actually recently, about a week and a half ago in Napa Valley region. And it was about a couple hundred people outside in the middle of a vineyard. So it wasn't quite a theater, but wow, seeing live faces for the first time. But it's been 18 months since Flying Over Sunset was shut down.
Wow.
That I'm finally seeing actual faces and not a Zoom recording. Mm-hmm. And then the second time was just recently in the Hamptons doing a Crazy For You concert out there with Susan Stroman. But this one, for me, this is the first time with an audience in New York City. And it's going to be quite emotional for me because New York is my city. It's been my city since I was a kid, since I first did my first Broadway show in Gypsy with Tyne Daly. I've seen so many evolutions of this city, and I've seen it be down and out, and I've seen it be thriving. And we're in a place right now where we need some mending, but I've seen it come back, and it's going to come back again. And I'm so excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, we are excited to have you back. I feel like everyone is in this weird place of like, wow, I'm getting back on the stage. This is happening. And it's really exciting and a little nerve-wracking, but I think mostly everyone is just really excited to finally either get back on a stage or see somebody back on a stage. You know what I mean?
I think so. I think we took a lot of it for granted early on. At least mm-hmm. I did. I've always been one of those actors who just love to work. And sometimes we forget it's not just about the next thing we're doing or whose project is the best. Sometimes it's really just the simple act of connecting simply with an audience. What kind of magic that can inspire, you know, just out of the theater, just it's how we can really relate to each other and say, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And so I think I think this pandemic, you know, has brought a lot of silver linings for us in ways. There's been a lot of grief, a lot of loss, a lot of heartbrokenness. But you know what? I think we've been able to see some good things. Like, we've been able to get closer to our friends and family, and we've been able to see what's most important. And hopefully, as artists, we can instill that into what we're doing on the stage again. I know I am. I know it's even in this concert that I'm doing at 54, bringing my show there again, I know I have the ability to look at people differently out there and to share my gift for what I do in a much more intimate way, a much more honest way now. So there's definitely silver linings in it all. But yeah, it's been hard. Wow, we are so excited to come back. As Broadway starts to amp up again and audiences get excited, well, there's these beautiful venues like 54 Below, which is classic New York, that we're all going to be excited to be performing in again. Look, the food is great there. The drink is great. People are going to come and have a good time. I get to sing and dance for them. So I'm honored.
Yeah. You said, you know, Broadway coming back. That is such a crazy idea. I think everyone is still wrapping their brain around the fact that Broadway went away somewhere and now it's coming back. Is there a show, since Broadway is now coming back, apart from your own, that you're a part of, that you're excited to see or see happen or excited to come to Broadway?
I mean, I'm excited about all of them. I'm Absolutely. Trying to think. I mean, there's some special ones. I think I had seen Hadestown the year before the pandemic sort of hit, and that really hit me on a lot of different levels with what we're going through. I think it's very of this time. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see Company coming back, not just because of some diva performances in there, but for what it really means to be with each other again. I know personally I'm not quite used to having a group of people around me and feeling that comfortable. And I want to. I want to feel that intimacy with people again. But to celebrate what it means to have community, and any show that celebrates community in one form or another, it has a vote in my book. So I'm excited. I'm real excited.
Yes. And that sense of community, that is definitely something that a lot of people on this podcast have brought up. The idea of Broadway's community just feeling very much like a family and feeling much tighter as a group than a lot of other industries, you know, the community of theater supporting each other. Now, where did you learn that, you know, idea of the community and everything? Were you always a theater kid? When did you start dancing? When did you start performing?
Well, community to me actually came from Broadway. I had a really tough upbringing. I started dancing when I was 4. Thank God I had dance to turn to express myself to. It was almost like a therapeutic outlet for me. Before I ever felt any kind of spirituality or anything like that, I used it as a simple form of therapy. I as a kid, because I had a sort of a chaotic childhood. We moved around a lot. Parents got divorced. When I was 11 and I did my first Broadway show, I always count Broadway. It's, you know, not just that gypsy family, but Broadway as my second family. I always say it because I always feel at home and I never want to leave it. And I feel isolated when I'm not around it. Mm. Whether I'm doing anything else in the world, traveling or, you know, even if it's something for TV or film, it's not the same. It's not the same kind of community. It's going to be insane to feel that first day of rehearsal going back to Flying Over Sunset and seeing all these wonderful, talented faces in the room and knowing we're about to put on a show for the first time. It's just part of my identity. It's where I belong. And frankly, I owe so much to my Broadway community. And I think there's a responsibility in all of us, but I just look at myself going, it's my responsibility to uplift the rest of us in my community, to accept us, to feel a togetherness so that there's no divide, but that we're really one strong union of Broadway performers, actors, crew members, musicians. We have a message for the world, and And we want to change hearts and minds, and we have to be together to do it. And so, yeah, it's definitely been my second family.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you described it perfectly just now. That is also what I feel from theater. I can go somewhere else, any other industry, and it just does not feel like they're moving as tight of a community as like the theater folks do. And I love that. And not only are we talented, we have a sense of community as the theater folks. That's great. And the fact that you're able to tap into that, and that's something that fuels you, it reads so much, Tony. When you perform, the energy you give off is just so strong. So you feeling the audience, we're feeling you too. And it's just so exciting to talk to you and hear you saying that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. Simply put, it's a lot of fun too. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this for 31 years or whatever I've been doing it professionally now if I wasn't having a blast doing it. It's a lot of work, and I've done some really tough jobs. People say, what's the hardest job I ever did before? Well, on the town. I mean, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do.
Yeah.
You know, sing big legit arias and 10-minute ballets. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't put myself through it and exhaust myself if I didn't have a blast doing it and feel like there was something possibly unearthly spiritually that I was giving to people and shaking them to their core. You know, it's ministry what we do on stage. No matter what we do, there's part of us that, you know, we've been giving these gifts, and I think it's up to us to give it back to people. That's our path. So, and that's my path. And whether it be a big stage like that or a small stage like 54 Below, it's a different message. It's a more intimate feeling of, let me bring you into my living room and show you a little bit of what I do in my own studio time and tell you some stories maybe you haven't heard before and possibly make you feel like, you know, you're going to be okay. You're not alone. Those simple messages are always the strongest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And you just mentioned that On the Town was your hardest role. That was one of my questions. But it was hard, but you obviously nailed it. You ended up getting a Tony Award nomination for that. And that is probably one of the most dance elevated shows, and singing and dancing, just that level of intensity. How did you prepare?
I was in ballet class for a solid 4 or 5 months straight, like almost every day before I started, because I knew this was going to kick my butt. And I'm so glad I did that, because I did walk into my first day feeling really in shape. Just even as a partner in ballet, to partner someone like Megan Fairchild, who is with New York City Ballet, you know, I want to be my best, and my job is to support her. And doing a 10-minute ballet where you're throwing her all over the stage, you want to feel in shape. You have a responsibility, a commitment to somebody else. So I wanted to do my part. But at the same time, you know, it was a very collaborative experience. Josh Burgos was very collaborative as a choreographer. He listened. He wanted to see all of our ideas. And I think that's why he was so great at what he did. Everybody, I mean, it really just takes a team of people. And that's why I thrived, because of the people around me. Other than that, though, I never knew a role existed like this, where you could sing a huge baritenor legit song that was written by Bernstein, and then you know, dance 3 or 4 ballets. That you don't see that much in musical theater. So I was so happy to find that, because I did train classically, and I was a dancer my whole life. But yes, it was the hardest job I ever had. And frankly, I'll never forget, like, the last show, we took our bows and I went down to my dressing room, and I remember just kneeling down on my knees and just sobbing my eyes out. And somebody came in and said, "Are you okay?" I was like, "Yeah." And they were like, "What's wrong?" I said, "I never have to do that again." It was just the hardest thing I'd ever done. And to the point where I knew I was going to miss it. I knew it was one of the biggest things I'd ever experienced, but I knew I gave it everything I got. And I knew I would never regret a moment, because I gave it all of my energy. And that's when you're sucking the marrow out of life in theater, when you feel like you've prepared, you've collaborated, you've given it your all, and you committed to the very end. And I think That's what makes a good theater artist.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, leading up to On the Town, though, you had so much experience on Broadway with other performances. You started in the 1989 revival of Gypsy and then came back for the 2008 revival. Like, you've done Gypsy twice already in different roles. How was that experience for you, coming in as a newcomer and then coming back to the same show as somebody with a lot more under their belt?
Well, Gypsy has always been my favorite show. And not just because, obviously, when you're a kid, you know, people say all the time, things are heightened in life. Your experiences are heightened. You're much more hypervigilant of things around you. And sure, but it just so happened that the show I was doing at the time was Gypsy. It was, in fact, arguably the best show created of all time, with the best overture created of all time.
Yes.
And so when you're a kid and you get to walk in the theater and you're getting dressed to a five-minute, you know, superstar overture, and you get to listen to that live every night in arguably the best created theater of all time, the St. James Theater, you're a little spoiled. And I didn't know it, but I felt it in my bones. I knew this was special. That show introduced me to an understanding of what storytelling was, because I'd always wanted to dance and maybe sing. And you know, I played the clarinet at the time, so I was a musical guy, but I didn't know what it meant to tell a story through that. And these performers did, and I watched them. I studied these performers. I studied Tyne Daly. And the reason why I was so excited to study them was because they were such kind, generous people. It wasn't just their craft, it was that they took me in and they saw me for me, and so it made me want to know more about them. And that is the real secret of our business, is you just have to be a kind person, a generous person, and you pretty much succeed after that. But I watched these people. I watched Tyne, and then I watched Bobby Lambert, who played Tulsa, do All I Need Is a Girl every night. And I just thought, this is the best one act, 10 minute scene in any show of all. It's amazing. It's beautiful from beginning to end. And it's always stuck with me. And I always felt like I had the essence of that character in my bones. You know, this guy who wasn't seen and didn't have the best childhood and felt like he had a dream and an aspiration in him that no one else believed in but him.
Wow.
And all of these dreams that were not supported by anyone else. And he let that secret of a dream in to Louise in an alleyway and said, please don't squash my vulnerability right now, but I'm about to let you in on how much I dream of performing and singing and dancing and expressing myself.
Wow.
And she kept it close, and they formed a bond, because, you know, they found something they could connect in with each other. They weren't alone. I'd always felt that. I think it's beautiful. And so I took that with me as an adult, and this show came back, and long story short, I fought my way into the audition room. And I probably wasn't exactly what everyone thought Tulsa looked like, you know, coming from Oklahoma. I mean, you know, slightly darker skinned, darker eyes, bigger guy, had some muscle on me at the time. I was doing a Chorus Line on Broadway as Al, the married guy, going from that to Tulsa. But I just felt like I knew the character, and I was grateful to know that Arthur Lawrence believed in that as well and took a chance on me. And it was sort of a role of a lifetime at that point.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is, like, you know, when you actually conquer your dreams and you play like your dream role at that time, it's hard to know what comes next. You have to start creating new dreams and figuring out, what do you really want to do on this earth? How do you want to give back and help people? And how do you do that through your art? So that was the next journey, was what to do after that. Because I sort of felt like I conquered the whole Gypsy lifelong childhood dream thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that is such an amazing story, and it's only one of your several amazing stories you have. Like, Was there a mentor in those early days that you remember? Are you still in contact with them, or were you kind of just learning the ropes on your own?
I've had so many mentors through the years. You know, my dance teachers, my first dance teacher, God rest her soul, Miss Jean Mixell, Miss Jean's School of Dance Arts in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
All right.
Those people believed in me. Mm-hmm. There's a little tiny dance studio still thriving. And my modern teacher in college, Doug Betts, who taught me how to breathe. And yes. Realizing that the breath is everything. The breath is everything. Without the breath, we have nothing as artists. Mm-hmm. But some early mentors, too, for me were Bill T. Jones, you know, being able to assist him in a few projects. And he challenged me and woke me up to what real art can be. Tina Landau has completely inspired me through her concept of viewpoints. And I take that with me in everything I do. Susan Stroman now. The ability to collaborate with someone who's always prepared, yet always gracious and kind in every scenario, and how you can be both. Mm. You can be talented and insanely creative and yet kind and generous. You can. Yes. And so all of these people have helped to mold what kind of art I want to bring out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, I just feel it is reciprocated. The energy and all the knowledge and everything that was given to you, we can see it. And even writers for the New York Times can see it. I'm going to read this quote directly from it because I don't want to mess it up. But there was Ben Brantley in the New York Times compared you to Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly and said, "You are a complete romantic dancing actor or acting dancer who is expressive with your twirls and jetés as with your face and voice." How does hearing stuff like that about yourself, being compared to Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly and being compared to this romantic dancer, do you connect with that? Do you feel that? Do you agree? How do you feel when you saw that?
You know, they're obviously my inspirations. Fred and Gene were always the first ones. Then Gregory Hines was a huge one when I got into my teens and watched how someone like that could dance. I put, you know, what we all do, especially as tap dancers, all we do is steal things. We just take we take things from people we see, mm-hmm. and we try to make them our own. And we say that they're ours. They're not. They're stolen from our past generations and ancestors. And all I can do is learn from what I like and what I don't like and take it on. And sometimes when I was younger, I always felt like, oh, I was born in the wrong era because of what I do. But at the same time, I feel a need for it in the current climate and where we are, whether it be using dance to just produce joy and happiness or take it dramatically somewhere where, you know, someone's in despair and needs to crawl out of it. Whatever it be, you know, I always send up a salute to these great people that have influenced me. You know, do I think I'm as good of a dancer as these people? No. I think that I've understood how to tell a story through it. Mm. And that's what people latch on to most. I think that's what being a good dancer is, though. It's not about kicking your head or doing 17 turns. Because guess what? I can't do any of that. I used to kick my head, but I can't, you know, I don't even try anymore. I just try to tell the story. I make you believe I can. Mm-hmm. And that illusion, that a story that is filled with vulnerability and honesty is leaps and bounds better than someone who can technically smash it on the dance floor. Because it's the same thing as hearing somebody sing a high note. After two bars of music, what else are we looking at? We want to feel something. We want to be connected. We want to find that interesting quality that makes us want to sit back and listen for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I just focus on that. I don't try to focus on being the best this and that. Because, I mean, if you look at tap dance in general right now, tap dance is through the roof with the level of talent. It is gone. I mean, the amount of young people who are doing things I could never dream of even today. It's unbelievable. But now I challenge them and I say, okay, now tell a story. Now bring who you are through to it, because that's the real challenge. And if you can marry your skill set to who you are, deep down, then you've got something real artistic there.
Now, do you mentor anybody or do any master classes or anything? Because I feel like this knowledge needs to be told to the children.
Oh, it's definitely got to be told to the children. It's part of it's part of what we have to do as artists. Mm-hmm. We've got to pass it on. Mm-hmm. I do. I love to teach, actually. And I enjoy it. There's a few organizations I've worked with through the years, one of them being the Young Arts Foundation, which is mostly stationed in Miami, but they have different organizations all over the world that they work with. But I'm an alumni with them, and I've directed and I've taught with them. Any young person who's in high school, they should definitely go apply for the Young Arts Foundation. Wonderful okay. scholarships and programs and everything. But I love it. The enjoyment I get out of it is that I've watched someone blossom. They come out of their shell. Mm-hmm. You know, they release all the demons that have been attacking them through the years, all the people that say they can't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so great to be able to release that from a young person because they got the rest of their lives still to go. To watch that, you know, it really inspires me, and it honestly informs everything I do as an actor. I take mm-hmm. it and I realize, like, oh, I got more to go. I got more to go here. What else am I going to say? Mm-hmm. So I find it to be almost prerequisite. Like, the more I perform, you know, the more I realize, okay, now I need to stop and teach and help someone younger understand where to go next. It's like part of my job.
Yes, it's how that community keeps growing. You're so knowledgeable of all of this information. You've been in the industry for so long at this point. Do you find any drastic differences between when you first came in and now in any aspect? You said the talent is crazier, but is there any other thing you feel different in the culture?
The idea of quote unquote Broadway has changed so much in my experience. You know, when I was a kid, you're watching, you know, I'm running from my parking garage to the St. James stage door, and it's a mucky New York. You know, you got drug dealers and prostitutes, and it's the crime rate is high, and it's dirty, and you don't have any of those flashing lights. It's just a bunch of billboards, no LED signs yet, you know, all, and what's bizarre is I loved it. And I don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with having a safe New York. Yes, we want that. But there's something old school in my heart about New York and Broadway that did I know it was going to evolve? Yes. But did I want it to evolve in certain ways as much? No, I kind of want that feeling of what Broadway was to stick around. In some ways it has, and maybe in some ways that's partly my job. I don't know, but it feels like there's a little, in my opinion, there's a little too much wink at the audience and sort of this behavior of like, I don't even know how to say it. It feels like an immature wink at the audience, how we're creating. I think this pandemic probably brought it down a little bit. And we're all just happy to get in there and simply do what we do. But there was something blood, sweat, and tears about old Broadway that I latched onto and wanted to be a part of that is not quite the way it is anymore. It's a little, to me, it's a little more overproduced now. There's probably way too many cooks in the kitchen for every show. And I'm not quite sure about the stories we're telling. You know, we got a million movies that are becoming musicals, and some of them are fantastic. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I question the legitimacy of are we truly taking original stories, original ideas, things that we have to tell, and putting them on the stage in a way where the music, the lyrics, the choreography, the direction, the actors can tell it in a way that it changes our viewpoints or uplifts humanity in a way that says we have to do this. I don't know. I mean, it's a constant question I ask myself. Are we just doing Broadway to do it, to say, look at us belt really high notes, or look at us dance, or look at us tell a joke, see, we got you laughing. Now, mind you, we need to laugh right now. I mean, if there was a proponent of a musical comedy, it's me. Let's get Crazy Feet back on the stage. You know what I mean? Like, let's get these big musicals where we just sing and dance and laugh our butts off. Mm-hmm. We need it. It's the climate we need. But that being said, I just, I want producers to, yes, have integrity and be mindful that there are a lot of scripts in the wings by insanely talented writers that are waiting for their shot. Let's give it to them. That's what, yes, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think it's amazing that all the new plays on Broadway are written by, you know, Black playwrights. I feel like we are definitely in some kind of Broadway, that's right, shift right now. And I'm excited to see where it goes, you know, hoping all COVID-ness stays calm.
And that's the thing, you know, we all want to come to the theater, but we all want to feel like we have a safe, yes, theater to come to. But I think, you know, I think the Broadway League is doing a great job. I think we just ought, mm-hmm, to stick together. I think the trick of it is we cannot divide, mm-hmm, ourselves. We have to figure out a way to point out what is unjust and look at it and bring all of us together to fix it. We cannot divide, mm-hmm, anymore. As long as we're in that sort of energy shift, we're going to make it. We're going to kill it. And we're going to evolve into a better community.
Well, you're definitely going to bring us together at Fine Science 54 Below. Can you talk a little bit about how exciting that show is going to be? Do you have some set list secrets you can let us know about, or are you keeping it all surprise?
Well, no, I, you know, through the years, I used to have a long script and all these things I used to say, but nowadays, I just enjoy the audience so much. I pick a bunch of songs that I think the audience for that day is going to need to hear. And then we just kind of talk. I like to banter. I like to connect with the audience. I like to keep it light. And nowadays, I really just want to put a smile on people's faces. Mm. I want joy to kick in. I want people to know that that not only are artists like me working on their craft still so that they can be happier, but that that we're all in it together. So part of my mission in doing a solo show is to sort of wake your soul up, wake your spirit up to know that, like, it's got energy. I like to infuse energy in people's souls when I sing and when I tap. And sometimes when I tap dance, it's interesting. You look out in the audience and they actually physically wake up. Like,
yes,
it's like if they were just kind of expecting something, part of them feels a shift and a surprise and a jolt to the system. That's yeah, that's the part I love. I love waking, yeah, I waken those spirits,
yeah,
up.
I definitely always make the jokes with my friends who are in the audience. I can see you too. I can see your face. Like, I don't know if y'all think just because I'm the one on stage, I can't see you, but I can see how you're reacting. And it's always nice to see the audience giving,
that's right,
you the energy that you're giving them, and everyone's just having a good time. I think we're really looking forward to your show at 54.
That's right.
Do you have any like special guests, surprise guests, or is that all? Is it just going to be Tony and the stage?
We might have, yes, I might have some surprise guests. I can't say what it is because everyone's got like,
of course,
schedules, of course, and TV schedules. Going to make sure everyone's not shooting something. Everyone's so damn talented. So I have to make sure they're free. But I'm hoping to bring up a guest that might sing a tap with me. Hopefully. That being said, yeah, honestly, my set list is sort of a plethora of things. Right now, I do a lot of Gershwin because, frankly, just gives me a lot of joy. And I think we're in the mood for that. But I do take a few things from my first album, The Floor Above Me, and that's still in the show. But maybe some newer songs as well. We might even learn a couple songs between now and the 21st. So I'm open. I've always challenged myself to see how tap dance can tell story or forward story that is maybe a pop song or something that is a little more contemporary than your standard, yeah, classic song. So I'm always looking for a new way to do that. So maybe that'll be
exciting. I mean, you are so talented. You act, you sing, you dance. Can you tell our listeners a fun skill that you have that a lot of people probably don't know? Tony Azbeck is also really strong at... Is it cooking? Is it painting?
Let's see, you guys.
Or are you strong?
Well, I did last summer. I mean, I wasn't good, but now I'm good. Last summer, my wife and I redid our entire kitchen. We knocked down a wall, and we completely gutted our kitchen with the help of a great friend of ours, Chris Johnstone, who helped design it. And We did a full-on DIY kitchen rental. Everything gutted. And I never thought I could do anything like that in my life. But when you're in a pandemic, you have some
just a little time.
And we did it much way cheaper than hiring people. Mm-hmm. Thank God. And that has changed my life.
Right.
And put a newfound respect on people who work with their hands and can craft and like build houses. That's just a beautiful art form to me. And so I have deep respect for that.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Acting, singing, dancing, home renovation. Tony Azbeck does it all, everyone. Is there a role that you feel like you still really want to play, a bucket list kind of role, even if, you know, it's kind of like a miscast? Do you have one?
Sure. One that I think that I could sink my teeth into, I almost got the chance to do it a few years back, is George and Sunday in the Park with George.
Wow.
I've always been attracted to this musical. I've been listening to it since I was a kid. And there's something that I keep reconnecting to and finding new meaning and finding a deeper resonance in as I get older, being an artist and understanding how to give all of your energy to your art, but also all of your energy to your relationships. It's the same time. And that sort of that balance, that juxtaposition and how you work all of that has been a really interesting way of, I don't know. I've always wanted to sink my teeth into that role and see what else I could find through that. Part of me selfishly just wants to grow more as a person by playing that part. But at the same time, I mean, the music is stunning. James Lapine, who I'm working with now at Flying Over Sunset, he knows it's like my favorite show right now. I got to see the revival, the London cast revival back at 54 Below, but not 54 Below, Studio 54, years ago. Just cried my eyes out the entire show. People in the row were looking at me like, this guy is having a moment. it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And it, you know, the song Sunday, oh my gosh. If there's not a song, an anthem that hits me so hard about where we're at as a community through this pandemic and how we just simply want to be, that we just want to be together in peace in one community to be able to experience what life has to offer in a simple way. It's right now. And that song Sunday to me is all about that. It's such a beautiful song. So
I could totally see you killing that role, like nailing it. Definitely. We got to make that happen. Who do we got to call? What phone numbers we got to dial to make sure we see Sunday in the Park again?
I mean, you got some rich friends. We gotta get some, anybody who owns a theater. You know, there's a lot of factors.
No, we gotta get you to do Flying Over Sunset first, because I know everyone is really excited about that. That's shut down during the pandemic, so you gotta do that. Was there a weird feeling during the pandemic, just like being paused? Did it feel like that at all?
Well, yeah, because we were supposed to have our first preview the night we got shut down. We were supposed to have our first audience. We'd been rehearsing for 6 weeks, and we were supposed to put a preview on at 7 p.m. And at 12:30, we were shut down. We were in our rehearsal. And, I mean, the entire cast was heartbroken, because you should have seen the faces as we go through the stage door thinking, we have a show tonight. We can't wait to show them our first shot at this. And we're being called into the auditorium, and what we thought was going to be 3 weeks ended up being now 18 months, 19 months. Yeah, it was tough, because, you know, I'd felt like we had a product that we were really proud of, and I was really in shape. a couple months later, I didn't feel as in shape. And I felt like, what's going to happen to our show? And well, I even, you know, all those feelings and those doubts raged through your head as this pandemic went on about, will Broadway ever come back? Will I ever do what I love again on stage? We've been just so isolated. I mean, we can all relate to all of the demons that have hit us through this, through the isolation and the fear and the doubt. And we've all had friends and family who have passed away from this. And it's just been really hard. So just simply coming back to anything right now, makes me the happiest person ever. So I'm excited.
Well, we are the happiest people ever here at Fine Science 54 Below, because we know how busy you are and we know how crazy life has been getting back on a stage. So the fact that you're coming back, I know people are so excited. Like this, I'm excited for sure. I'll be there cheering you on. I think everyone, do yourself a favor and go get tickets to Tony's show at 54 Below. It's going to be on September 21st and September 22nd at 7 p.m. The box office is open. They will help you. Tony, is there anything you want to say about your show before we head out?
No, I mean, if you guys want to have a good time, have some good food and drink, and watch some good singing and tap dancing, come hang out with me.
Yes, I promise a good time. Hang out with Tony. Let's party.
Let's get together yes. Again, people.
All right. Well, you heard it here. You can catch Tony Yazbek on September 21st and 22nd at 7 p.m. at Fine Science 54 Below. Come and enjoy an intimate evening of your musical favorites to brighten up your spirits, y'all, and infuse joy into your soul, okay? If you didn't feel that, I don't know how you're going to feel anything, okay? Get your tickets. Tony, this has been so exciting talking to you. Do you have any social media plugs that you would love to tell people to follow you on?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me there. Tony Yazbek Official, I think. Yeah. Something like that.
All right.
I don't know. I'm checkmark. Right. You'll find me.
All right. And I'm your host, Kevin Ferguson. You can find me on all social media platforms under KevinFerg_. Tony, it was so nice chit-chatting with you.
Pleasure,
Can't
Kevin.
Wait to
Thank
see you
so
on
much.
Stage. Thanks again.
You've been listening to the Fine Science 54 Below podcast, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.